Hi, my name is Johnny Softy. I am an alcoholic, and it's a privilege to be asked to speak here. I need to just open up with reading something that was texted me today. It says, "A treasure of the past. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes this life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them." Alcoholics Anonymous, page 124. What a gift it is for us to realize that all those seemingly useless years were not wasted. The most degrading and humiliating experiences turn out to be the most powerful tools in helping others to recover. And knowing the depths of shame and despair, we can reach out with a loving and compassionate hand and know that the grace of God is available to us. In love and service, George. George is my sponsor that God has blessed me with a little over 11 years ago. And part of this program has been, I'm here now, but I need to share what it was like, what happened, and how I got here. Because if I forget what's happened in the past, I know from my experience I will forget what has happened, how I got here. And I just wrote a few things down because I don't want to forget certain aspects of my recovery that I feel are important for me to remember and hopefully share with other people so that they may get something out of this. Those things weren't always, those thoughts that he was talking about in there were foreign to me, let me tell you. Tomorrow would have been like the holiest day of the world. St. Patty's Day. I could give you some stories about St. Patty's Days, but today, as I was riding over to somebody celebrating in Fredericksburg, I seen two signs. One on the way out, it said, "Good stories come from bad decisions." And I'll share some of them tonight. And then the other one on another church said, "Let the message change you. Don't change the message." And for many years, my friend, I tried to change this message. I tried to tweak it to fit it into what was good for me. And with justification, rationalization, and everything else that I can use in the powers of alcohol, it would make sense. Perfect sense to me. And I don't have to live that way today. And that is because of the people I've met, the people that God has blessed me with in my life, the suggestions I've listened to, which I was taught were not suggestions, they were just subtle commands that you must follow. And that's what I needed. I didn't need someone to, to give things to me gingerly. I needed them to be. But I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. 57 years ago. I think his name is Tom Lemanchin. I went to the parochial school system. I went to Catholic grammar school. I went to a Catholic high school. I went to a Catholic college. And somewhere along the line in there, I forgot that caring, loving God. And the more I drank, I'm going to tell you what, he became, not what I was originally taught. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But I have a father who was an alcoholic. There was a family history of drinking. I mean, drinking was okay. Drugs were taboo, all that type of thing. But I can remember as a little kid, you'd go get dad's beer and all those type of things. But as I got a little older, if you wanted to fit in with the crowd, I wanted to hang out with Conley O'Regan and Mike McCann, the older guys. You know what happened? You pick up a beer or two and you do some stupid stuff, and all of a sudden, you fit in. Comes along in your body, And as a child, it would be, as a teenager, I remember Easter break it was when we did our first drinking escapade. There was six of us, and we got a bottle of Seagram 7 and cream soda. We knew a lot about drinking at that point. And there were six of us that were supposed to be there, and three were late, so half of it was gone before you knew it. And that's about all I can remember, I remember the next day waking up in a puddle of puke, and my brother next to me, because he, you know, he was my older brother, and I followed, you know, what things happened. But when I look back at it now, you know, I remember my mom calling up and saying, "How are my men today? You going to go out drinking again today?" And it was like the furthest thing from my mind. But the part that when I look back about it is, 2 weeks later, I forgot about that. You know, it was like, okay, we're going to get a couple of tubes of beer, and we're going to, you know, we're going to do this, we're gonna, you know. So I can remember. I don't know if I was born an alcoholic, but I guarantee somewhere along that way, when picking up those drinks, an alcoholic was born. I can tell you that. And one of the things was, you know, going through school, high school was, you know, I played sports. I was academic, you know, a good academic student. So it was weekends type of thing. And if you want to keep your parents off your back, you get good grades. You know, they didn't bother you. You know, you were doing your things that you needed to do. But I could think of some of the crazy things that were done. And you know, there was alcohol involved in it. I mean, it was just part of acceptable. And it was, you know, kind of cute or whatever it was. I don't really know what it was. But when I try to look back on it because I want to try and realize sometimes what's going on. But it really doesn't matter because it was what it was, you know. I went to college, went to St. John's. I went to school of pharmacy, got out of pharmacy in 4.5 years out of a 5-year program. But the drinking was, I could always remember on the weekends, the drinking situation was always, you party on Friday, right? Saturday, you'd go out with your girlfriend. And on the way home, you go to a movie or you have some wine and cheese, you drop her off. And why there was this compulsion to go to TJ's pub or wherever everybody was, because I was missing something. I was just missing something. I don't know what it was, but I was missing it, you know. And I didn't want to miss anything. You'd go there, you'd have a beer or two, and it'd be like, why am I here? But yet, I continued to do it because there was always that thought that, I may miss something out there. Yeah. It wasn't that I liked to drink. You know, I never put that two and two together. You know, I never thought of drinking and driving and all those things. Then when I first got in high school, you know, everybody knows you and it's not. When I went to college the first year, you become a number. You know, your social security number on a wall, which today would be, forget it. Some computer hacker would have a dream team because, but I can remember I kind of got lost in the shuffle, and Monday Night Football, when I got to make my schedule for the second semester, Monday Night Football was really important, you know what I mean? Yeah. So Tuesdays I'd start late, and Wednesday night was bowling, which is just, so Thursday I made my schedule late, and I'm looking back now and I'm saying, I made sure I had fun along the way, you know what I mean? But somehow in the schooling part, it was like, I really don't want to do this. You know, my friends are cops and firemen, and they're, you know, construction workers. And I can remember my brother-in-law when I was in first year of college. He was an apprentice in the plumbers union. He'd tell me his job was to go in the morning, go get everybody's coffee and this and that. He'd get the beer for this guy and the booze for this guy. And he said, by the time I came back, I'd work for 10 minutes. They'd send me back out for lunch. And so I'm sitting there saying, what a job. What a freaking job. Sign me up. You're getting paid for all this, right? You go to school at night. You do this. You know. But that's what my mind was. I would go to school. I would go to work when I was working in the summers. I would do all that. But the reward was always that I was going to get fired up on Friday and Saturday. And that's just the way it was. And as long as I didn't have any aberrations, my parents were fine with it. You know what I mean? It was, you know. And I can remember when my dad was trying to quit. I was like early in middle of college probably. And I remember having no human compassion for him. You know, I'm in my roaring 20s now, buddy. And he didn't have a program. He didn't have anything. And I could just remember like saying, my mom say, pick up a drink, you're so goddamn miserable. You know? And I would always say, I'm not going to be like him. I'm not going to be like him. I went to college. I had all these qualifying things. And guess what? You know what? I became just the same way. But you know what? This program has taught me, you know, I will get to it, but I'll share that now, was that when I look back on that, that anger and hatred I had and this and that, if it could have, would have been, I could have been, you know. I look back now, I said, the guy worked two jobs, he did this, and instead of taking all the negatives, they helped me sort that out. And I got to see the positive sides. You know, so when I hear my relatives say this and that about your dad, I don't see that part. I remember, I tell you what, one of the qualifiers I had was that it blocked out a lot of the bad things. Like you said earlier, man, I never knew who was coming in that front door. It was the same man, but whether he was happy or sad or mad or glad, you know, and I look back now and I say, you can imagine, poor guy go work all day, right? And all you say, wait till your mother say, wait till your father gets home. Yeah, the poor guy just walking the door. He could have been having a good day or a bad day. We were all half under the bed. We were half out the door. We couldn't wait to go back out. And the beauty of this program is let me say, you know what? The dude did the best he could. I didn't become an alcoholic because of him. I didn't become an alcoholic because my mother tried not to make me. You know what I mean? I became an alcoholic because I love to drink. That's what it came down to. I remember in college, and then I'm in halfway through college. I went in my first 2 years. I had a 2.0 GPA. And I was saying, you know what? They ain't going to throw me out unless I get a 1 point. I think it was if you had a D. I was like, I'm coasting fine. But God put this lady in my life, this angel. You know, this woman I met and fell in love with. And in the next couple of years, I graduated with 3.5, you know, which was like my whole life was focused again. You know what I mean? I had a focus. When I was in high school, sports and that, and grades was a focus. But I liked to drink. I'm going to tell you what. And all my family drank. And everywhere we go, if you look back at any family picture, there's always a bottle of booze on each table. And there's beer. And there's all sorts of Schaefer and Wrangel and all these other types of beers that they drank. And life was fun. You know, life was about working hard, playing hard. You know? And when I finished college, I wanted to go to medical school. My parents told me, same thing they told me when I had to go to college. I had got accepted a partial scholarship to Dartmouth back in 1975. By 1975, the tuition was $20,000 plus room and board. And my parents said, we'd love to help you, son, but a house costs $12,000. And we owe a lot of money on that. So you know where you stand on that one, you know, kind of. And then my goal was I wanted to go to medical school, and they couldn't afford it. I just didn't have any of the means to do any of that stuff. But I was happy doing what I did. You know what I mean? So I got out of pharmacy school. I got engaged to this woman. And she went away to Eastern Virginia Medical School here. And we had like a weekend flying back and forth on People's Express. And I had the freedom to do what I wanted, to drink when I wanted to. And I just, you know. And when I look back now, people say, why didn't you go? And I look back now. I didn't want to change. I had what I wanted. I had my friends where I wanted. I had my family where I wanted. I had the woman I loved 350 miles away. But I had the convenience of getting back and forth. But it probably would interfere with my drinking. Because when I was around her, I had a different set of standards. You know what I mean? I was slowly with those lines that we draw. I know I drew them. And it was like the wave hit it. And now I draw a different line. And another wave would hit it. And I'd say, I ain't doing that stuff. And I'd draw another line. And it was happening that way. And lo and behold, I went into a bar one night, and I thought there was somebody that I knew. And I walked in, and I pinched her in behind, and she turned around, and I was like, oh, sorry. I happened to know who her brother was and this and that, so I apologized and bought her a drink, of course. And like about a year later, I had made a commitment to, I had spoke to the woman I was engaged to. I said, you know, maybe we should see other people because this is kind of hard and, you know, and all this. I don't know what the reasoning behind that was, but I probably because my clear thinking was kind of blocked by alcoholic vision. So she got pregnant and, you know, I thought the right thing to do was to get married, which I did, and we had a baby. And she was my drinking partner. Now, you understand for a year. But, you know, once she got pregnant and that, her parameters changed. Mine didn't. I still wanted to work hard. You know, but then I would work a second job. But I still would drink. You know what I mean? And My drinking got worse. I actually took a job. I'm 23, 24 at that point, and I was working for an independent pharmacy. And I'm working. I'm off on Wednesdays and Sundays, and all my friends are going to Hamptons and this and that. And I'm like, this is not for me, man. I don't want to be cooped up. So I got a job in pharmaceutical sales. Now, you can make your own hours. You can do a lot of things. And when I first took the job, for some reason in my head was I never would drink during the week hardly. And then now after work, I'd say, I'm going to have two beers, because with two beers, you can't get arrested on the way home. Yeah. You can get a ticket for an open container. This is all my rationalization. This is clear thinking in my head. Yeah. Well, the two beers became six because it was cheaper to buy six than it was to buy two, and that whole thing went on. And during this time, my son was born. He had a VSD. I can remember we spent 56 days in the pediatric intensive care unit. Well, he did the surgery, and he had to have a second surgery. And he's fine today. He's 28 years old. And but I remember doing all the right things, but at the end of the night, I would drink then. Not realizing that I'm on freaking call all night, right? You know what I mean? In case something happens, but no. I polished up the whole car, and it looked fine on the outside, but the insides were churning, man. I needed to drink. And I continued to, And finally, where she, the drinking got too much, she asked me to go away. And I went to a place called South Oaks in Long Island, and I went there not to quit drinking. I went there to get everybody off my back, okay? I wanted to turn the clock back, far enough back, that I could drink the way I used to. And we all know that don't happen. That just don't happen. So in there, I remember sitting in one of the meetings, and a guy shared, he said he went to the detox, and the guy said, the first guy interviewed him said, do you have a problem with alcohol? And he said, absolutely not. He says, do you understand the question? He said, I understand your question 100%. Do you have a problem with alcohol? He said, absolutely not. So he goes out, and he gets the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist comes in, and he says to him, do you understand the question? The guy asked him, he says, yeah. He says, do you have a problem with alcohol? He said, no, I don't have a problem with alcohol. I have a problem without it. And that struck in my head. I was like, that's the truth, man. I can't get from point A to B without having a drink. I mean, I would not drink for 2-3 days, and I wanted to parade down Main Street, but I would always quit. I wouldn't quit. I'd go to sleep. And then I'd wake up when I needed another drink. That's basically where it came down to at the end. But at that point, when she gave me the ultimatum, it was easier to drink. So I didn't man up. I manned out. And I said, I'm going to drink. And so I continued to pay for, we had bought a home. I had all the pictures on the outside, but I didn't have internal peace, that I can tell you. So at that point, I continued to drink, and, I was doing well in my job, and so I always had these markers that were justifications when I look back on it for my drinking. And, I went to them finally, and I told them that I needed to go away. And they sent me away, okay? And I did, and I stayed sober for about a year. And then I decided to control my drinking a little more. Meanwhile, on this thing, I've won 2 trips to awards and all this stuff. People are like, wow, you've changed. And I'm like, I didn't change. My mind is still thinking drinking, man. I'm telling you what. But I remember when that guy shared that. I mean, I didn't know I had hope at that point. I didn't know I had hope. I said, if anything I make over 30, I'll be happy. That was the life. I'll just trudge through this life and don't worry about it. So, in 1992, my father was sickly. He passed away. 6 months later, on St. Patty's Day, my brother-in-law passed away. And 6 months after that, almost to the day of my father dying, my mother passed away. I didn't grieve. I'm going to tell you what. I was sad. I didn't grieve because I was too drunk to grieve, to tell you the truth. I stayed, I had people coming from work to these funerals, and I tried to, as best I could, And then finally, he got to the point. I went back to tell my boss that I picked up, and he's like, "Okay, do you want to go back in rehab?" I'm doing well. I have a good job. And I told him, "No, I don't. I don't want to go back there again." It was my mind sick. I had no outside spiritual counsel. I had nothing going on. I had drinking glasses just on. And so they said, "Well, if you're not going to go back to rehab, then we're going to have to let you go." And I was like, "Fine. I got a pharmacy degree. I don't really care." That was my stupid, that was my selfish thinking. So I did that. Luckily, I can still maintain the fact that, the rules are the rules. You don't drink on your job. You don't drink before your job. You can drink all the hell you want after your job. But you cannot drink, any of that time. So I continued to do that for another couple of years. I met the woman who is my wife now. God bless her. God put another angel in my life. And we bought a house in Orange County, upstate New York. And I proceeded to work like a madman, because I wanted her to she had two children at that point. Kelly was 10 and Brian was 8. I had my children for my first marriage. I got to see them on the weekends, every other weekend and all that. But I moved myself. That's all I did. And I had a nicer, fancier house now or whatever. But I continued to drink to the point where she, was getting fed up with. Now I'm sitting here saying to myself, what's wrong with these two people? What's wrong with them? I mean, this is a sick mind. I didn't connect the two dots. What was the universal thread? Me and the alcohol. But that's a sick mind at work. So I need to remember those things. So I finally, when she had enough, she asked me to move out, and I said, fine. And I knew it was kind of a demise at that point. So I got an apartment up there. When I was buying this house, so my first wife, because we're going through a divorce, doesn't know about this house and all this stuff. Everything's in her name. Thinking, right? Praying for her. Lo and behold, when she says you have to leave, I go to the lawyer and he says, well, the sooner you accept it that it's her home, the better off you're going to be. And I'm like, I could have paid a dollar in an AA meeting, not $3,000 here for you to tell me that. And that's exactly what they told me at the AA meeting. I was like, if I can look back on these things, because my bad decisions make for good stories. And so I accepted that. Then within 4 months, I came down on September 11th to see some of my friends that, I had lost some friends in 9/11. On my way home on the 15th, I was about a mile from home, and all of a sudden I see these lights behind me. I'm like, God dang it, I'm busted. And lo and behold, I had seen some, to make a long story short, I got arrested. Bailed out because I had enough cash in my pocket. The judge was like, you ain't got enough money. I said, well, if you take the handcuffs off me, I gave him 1,500 crisp $100 bills, and I went about my way. And he's like, okay. So then they got to give me a car ride home from the police station, from the judge. He wasn't happy because this is nighttime. He had to come out of his house. I get back home. All the neighbors are out, partying. I'm going around on a party. Like it was nothing. Well, why'd you get a police escort? My car broke down. Don't worry about it. I had a whole story going, and this and that. 4 months later, on little Christmas, January 6th, it was my mother's favorite day. She always loved that day. I take a neighbor. I go to a meeting tomorrow, so when this neighbor across the street from me, his husband, says, drinking too much, but I take him to a meeting. I said, I'll take him to a meeting. I get soused, and I take him to the meeting, right? So I can introduce him to these people. And on the way home, he's like, well, let me drive you home. Stay in my house. It's only a mile away. Don't worry about it. I got another DWI. So my life is going to heck in a handbasket now. And the cop said to me, why didn't you run? I said, finally at that point, I'm tired of running. I am tired of running. He says, you're going to jail. I said, I know. I don't care. At that point, I didn't care. I didn't want to drink. That's how bad it had gotten. You know, when I'm sitting there in this canary Orange County jail jumpsuit, not going to call my wife because I'm prideful. I'm embarrassed. I got all this stuff going on. But God's got different plans, you see. The guy who came to tow the car worked with a guy that my wife worked with. So it all got around, and so she said she'd bail me out if I go to rehab. I said, okay, fine. But I had to go right from there to there. I was going to figure my way home. You know, the game was gone, and the game wasn't being played anymore with her. So from there, I wish I could tell you that I couldn't quit drinking. I didn't. I came out. I got involved in this PAP, which is called Professional Assistance Program. I figured before the Office of Professional Discipline comes down on me, let me do some proactive stuff. And this was all suggested to me by some guy. I don't even know where the heck he came from, you know, to this day. And he took me up to Albany. And when it was all said and done, this guy, James, he said, just help somebody else out. That's, you know, so why are you doing this? He's like, just, you'll help somebody else out someday. So I go on this PAP and this PRN, this Pharmacy Recovery Network, and because I volunteered for it, I got to have I had a temporary sponsor, this guy John, which was a great guy, because he used to ride me, because I took my license. I used to ride with him every morning, and he'd say to me, please, just don't drink. He's a big iron worker, 6'7", man, this guy. And he would say, just please don't drink. And I'd try not to. And I would try not to, and I would continue drinking, and then finally, I had to pee randomly. I could have had somebody else pee, but because I came up positive, they called me up into New York, and I had to go there, and it's just showing you the power of alcohol. I had to go in front of this board, and my wife was with me, of course, and they came out, and they said, you got to come in, they want to talk to you again. My wife says, can I come in with him? And she said, yeah, you can. So I said, you know, I'm just willing to take my punishment. I'm going to take my beatings. I did something wrong. I got caught, and I was going to take my beating. And my wife said, well, you don't understand. He's not a bad person. And they said, yeah, but he's showing no remorse. And I didn't have remorse at that point, because I didn't have a God of my understanding at this point. I had a God, but he was letting me down. I was looking at him. He's letting me down. Why? Where are you when I need you? You know what I mean? So, lo and behold, they said, well, you can just unsign yourself out of the program. And then when you want to come back and you have to give us 8 straight urines for 8 consecutive weeks, twice a week, you have to go somewhere, but you cannot work as a pharmacist during this time frame. I said, fine. So the guy I was working for, I said, can I work for you as an intern? He said, sure. So I'm working for like 1/5 the pay, 1/4 the pay that I was making. But I was willing at this point to try something different. So I had this counselor, and he gave me the number to St. Christopher's Inn in Graymore, New York, which is run by the Jesuits. And I'm going there for 21 days, 28 days. Well, God had a different plan, and it was the best decision I ever made. I stayed for 121 days. You know, I was like, how's my wife going to survive? How's this? And one of our aunts said, don't worry, she can stay with us until you get back. You just need to get better. She'll be safe. And that was a relief. And I can remember her saying, I could sleep now. I can imagine. Now, when I sobered up finally, she was like, oh, I can sleep. I can rest. I know where he is. You know, I'm not out gallivanting around, driving around, you know, and all this stuff. So when I got in there, that was the best thing in my life. I mean, we used to have to stand for 5 minutes before every meal in silence and pray for what you were grateful for. And in the beginning, I didn't have a lot to be grateful for. But you know what? I remember this one guy, Ron, saying at the meeting, he'd say, I don't have much to be grateful for today, but I'm sober, and I'm grateful for that. And that's what my theme was in the beginning. I'm grateful to be sober today. I had hope. Hope. And what my sponsor told me was, hope is what? Help one person every day. And in the beginning, the only person I could help was me to stay sober. I had to ask God in the morning. I had to get on my knees and say, please, please help me. Just take this from me. Take it from me. I've asked him a million times, but let him take it. And amazingly, I didn't ask for it back. And when I was in there, it was my first experience with steps three. I'm in there, and the lady who's my counselor is telling me, maybe you need to go to a longer-term program and whatever. And I was like, on the inside, I was burning. I was burning up. And I said, you know what, Karen? Fine. Why don't we make a decision? Because I've been here all along, and I only had X amount of time. She said, we're going to make this date, and if nothing happens by that date, if you don't get long-term extended care, and you know, because I said, fine. It was the first time in my life that I made a decision to turn my will, which is, you know, my life, and my thinking and my actions, my will and my life, over to a power greater than myself. And lo and behold, nothing came through. I went home. I took what I learned in there. And what I learned in there, they told me to get involved. I joined the choir. I was involved with people that probably 2 days before were picking garbage out of a thing in Manhattan somewhere or whatever. There was 130-something people in there. But when you heard people singing, you would not know where they came from. You didn't care where they came from. I learned about prayer. There was a little sign when I walked into the church, and it would say, pray like you're a little child. Simply tell God what's in your heart, and he will understand. And it became simple to me. So when I'm struggling with something, I simply tell God, ask for his guidance, and I tell him. Because they told me I had to go from here to here. From here to here. Maybe it's only 9-10 inches, but God dang, it was a long distance. It was a long distance. So I came out of there January 6th, little Christmas. My mom's favorite little three wise men came, but I never listened to it. I got out. They told me, get your butt like it's on fire to a meeting. And I heard that. And I'd heard that a million times. So I went to a meeting in Queens Village, and I got there. Raised my hand. I said, hi, I'm Johnny. I'm an alcoholic. I just got out of St. Christopher's in Greymore, and I need help. Because I can always remember reading in the grapevine. I remember on the bus one day, it said, I don't know, I was wrong, and I need help. And those three questions stuck in my head, because if I didn't know, I'd make it up. I was never wrong, because I could always be right, and I never needed anybody's help. I'm a one-man show, and if I'm going to do anything, so, and those was what a relief. So after I shared that, the guy who was sitting two chairs away from me comes up afterwards. He says, would you like to go through the steps? And I said, yeah, I really would. That was George, the guy that gave me the message. So he says, what are you doing now? I said, well, right now I'm working, as an intern. He's like, okay. He says, so you got Wednesdays and Fridays off? I'm like, yeah, Wednesday and Friday nights. And we started sitting down. He made an agreement. He says, I only know how to do this one way, and that's going through this book. If you're in, you're in. If you're not in, let me know, because there are other people I can help. And I remember I got home that night, and I said to my wife, I said, this guy's got 12 freaking years. What does he need me? What is he trying to do? You know what I mean? I still didn't catch it. I still was as dumb as a freaking wall. And she said, why don't you try it? You might like it. It might work. You know, I thought if I just sobered up, that I would be, everything would be fine. My wife used to say to me, she said, instead of being a drunken a-hole, you'll just be an a-hole. She was blatantly honest with me. I love the woman for her, trust me. I really wanted to throw out the window at that point, but I did it. And I remember he told me he's going to pick me up at 7 o'clock, and my phone rings at 5 o'clock, and I'm like, he says, you ready? I said, you told me to get me at 7. Oh, I'm early, come on. And I said to him, and then he picked me up, we got his kids, we took his two kids to karate, we set the meeting. We took his two kids off to karate. We went back to the meeting. We went to a meeting. We went and picked up his kids. We brought them back home. And he drove me home. We talked the whole way. And for the first time in my life, I said, wow, this guy's sober. He's got all this love. I seen it. I could see it. I could physically touch it and palpate it with my hands. I was like, wow. And what it struck me in my heart was I didn't care what he knew. I cared that I wanted to know that he cared, and he did. You know, and he brought me in his home and introduced me to his family. I'm like, and from that day on, we met and we went through that big book, piece by piece. And the greatest thing that happened for me was, As we went through these things, these glasses, instead of going out here and taking every one of your inventories, they went this way. And I started to look inside of me and say, what part did I play in all this chaos and confusion? And it wasn't always about you. You know, my father used to tell me, you can't make something wrong right, kid. And every time you point your finger out, there's two fingers pointing back. There's plenty of fingers pointing back at you. And he used to always tell me, nothing good happens after midnight. Yeah. You know? And he said, there was a whole bunch of things he said to me, and he would always say, but you can't make something wrong right. And so I learned, I got to be honest with this dude. You know what I mean? It's not a unique quality for alcoholics. I didn't want to be honest with a lot of people because I want to take this stuff with me, as we said earlier, to the grave. But what a relief it was. You know, when I first came out, I remember I thought of the Kansas song. It says, though my eyes could see, I still was a blind man. And though my mind could think, I still was a madman. So I needed somebody to just show me the way. And he did. We went through this stuff. And in the word step, that's what he taught me. It's STEP. A situation is going to occur. What do I think? I never used to think. My emotions came right in, and the P was performance of my behaviors was always the same. So I had to learn. I'm a kid, a type A personality, and I want instantaneous gratification. I want all this stuff. It is hard. It is still hard. When I don't take a moment to think, my thinking becomes alcoholically. And then if I have to take a sip. But in here, it tells me, when I'm wrong, I can admit it. Whoa! Wonderful. So, I've shared this with Billy before. I've had bad moments, but I don't have bad days anymore. Because she's taught me something. You told me I can start my freaking day over at any point. And the guy, John Gleason, I remember the first day when I came with him with a problem, he said, all right, I'm just going to ask you to do one thing. What's that? He says, make a decision not to make a decision. What are you, out of your mind? How do you do that? What are you, crazy? Make a decision not to make a decision. What kind of thinking is that? But it was totally out of my realm. I wouldn't have thought that in a million years. So, after I went through these steps with George, he came to me and he came up with this. I said, here it comes. Now, I only ask you one thing, and one thing only. I said, what's that? You got to go help somebody else. And I'm like, I'm not, you know, I'm sitting there. He says, no, you've been through the steps. You got the big book. You're armed. You got God. You got God. Your relationship with God has changed. My relationship totally changed. The sponsor, my wife, and so I got these two dudes, both came, you know, that asked me if I'd sponsor them. One is a lieutenant in the New York City Fire Department. He's a former special ops guy, a halo jumper, high altitude, low, great. I'm like, you know, and I got another guy, two of them at the same time. One of them was yearning. Pat says to me, he says, the only thing I ask you is, can I call you every day? And I'm like, this is a dream. What, are you kidding me? Yeah, you can call me every day. You can call me anytime, every day. You know, I need this just as much as you. I have to remember, I am a patient. I'm not cured. I'm not up here. I'm in the asylum, buddy. You know what I mean? And I have to remember that every day. And the other guy, Kevin, to this day, he's still sober. But I went, and then I think somebody mentioned earlier where I actually brought my fourth step with him. I took it out. I laid it out for him. I showed him everything. I said, maybe he needs something. He's still sober today. He's sober but angry. Pat's been helping people. So I looked at it. My sponsor had a sponsor. I have sponsees. I came down here. Then I came down to Virginia, man. And I'm like talking to my sponsor. You know, and he's like, how many meetings are you making? I said, I'm making as many as I can. Good answer, right? It's evasive. It's not, you know. I'm making as many as I can. He says, you got the big book. You got everything you need. What are you doing? And I was working because we bought a house. You know, my wife wanted a deck. You know, I can do all this. He says, I know what you're suffering from. I said, really? He says, you're suffering from untreated alcoholism.
I was like, these sons of a...
That's what my first thought was. But you know why? This is a program of honesty. They told me when I got here, you don't have to be honest with me. You got to be honest with yourself. You know what I mean? If you say you didn't drink, I got to believe you, until you prove me different. So he says, you got everything you need. So I started going to meetings in Fredericksburg. And then I started going to the lunchtime meetings in Culpeper. And I started to meet people. And I started to... And down the road, he put a gentleman who's sitting out here now. He asked, somebody came up and asked me if I would sponsor. I was like, fine. You know what? And it's wonderful because you know what? When I was... George used to do this to me all the time. He would say... He'd get me to answer my question with a question. You know, how would you answer this? And he used to tick me off. I'm like, what do you mean? I asked you a question. You're supposed to give me an answer. You're my sponsor. God dang it. But he would get me to answer my own question. And I'll never forget, one time we were at a meeting, and this woman came in, and she had this German accent. I'll never forget it. And she was complaining because the social services had just, you know, child welfare service had just taken the two kids away. And she's whining and carrying on. And I'm over here. And it's going around the room. And George is over here. I'm new. And he's still my new sponsor. And I'm like, stump the sponsor. I want to see what he's going to say now. Everybody else is giving, like, I really don't know. And it comes to him and he says, God must really love you. Where's he going with this? He said, he took your two children, you put them in a safe place so you can work on yourself and get sober. I was like, wow. Wow. That was like, now I went from, it's not my sponsor. Yeah, he's my sponsor. You know what I mean? But it was like, thinking outside the box. He thought, I would never thought that. I wasn't thinking that way. I didn't have enough sobriety. I didn't have enough recall to ask God, what should I do? I'm thinking, I'm not thinking. Now I'm reacting. I'm like saying, oh God, what do I tell this lady? You know? And it just, those are the aha moments in my life. I have a grandchild here who in my life I hope never sees me pick up a drink. And if I continue to do what I'm doing, I can't guarantee nothing, but the odds are he won't see me pick up a drink. You know, and it's not always peachy and cream, you know, in sobriety. 4 years ago, my 18-year-old, he tried to commit suicide. He's 14 at the time. But in this program, it tells us we will intuitively know how to do things that used to baffle us. My wife and I, we took him to Snowden. You know, he was in there for a month. And I didn't need to know the reasons why it happened. I needed to know that I could help him. And I didn't learn that from being a genius. I learned that from coming in here. And these people sharing, and people in New York. And I can remember people saying things like, yeah, Billy says, I remember him saying, God's a perfect gentleman. He never goes nowhere he's not invited. And I could hear people's voices in my head telling me, you know, reactions that I could hear, you know. The kid, right, you know, my son now, he's fine, Andy. He's a freshman at Virginia Tech. He's on course now to get out in 3 years. You know, he's. But I say the story not to look for any sympathy. I'm saying it to tell you that no matter what happens, we don't have to pick up a drink. You don't have to pick up a drink. As I was told in the rooms when I was in New York, pick up your butt, bring it to a meeting. Somebody will help you sew it back on. They will help you. They'll help you with it. But if you don't ask them, they will never know. And currently I have a nephew who's 31 years old, who's struggling big time up in Hicksville on Long Island, and I've tried to reach out for him, and my sister thinks that I've got this miracle cure, and I say, Kathy, I can't help him. If he doesn't want to help himself, there's nothing I can do. I cut a fishing trip short on Montauk to go spend some time with him. I got him in touch with all, and I realized I am not God. I can help, but I can't do what other people don't, you know, want you to do. I have a teenage son now. You know? He's at Virginia Tech. They do drink at college. You know what I mean? And I'm not here to stop him. But I am here to set up some healthy boundaries, some guideposts, and I never tell him what he can or can't do. I tell him, you may want to think about this, because I never thought of it at your age, and I didn't have somebody here to tell me that maybe you're drinking a little bit out excessively. I said, but now you turned 18, and if you do things, I'm going to tell you what my father told me. If it's unacceptable in this house, you'll be out the door. And it's not because I don't love you, it's because I care. And it's not easy to do. And last but not least, I have a brother-in-law right now, and He's actually up in the ICU in Culpeper, and I'm not here to take anybody's inventory, but he probably deserved a seat in here. He's dying. He drank plenty. He worked in construction, so I don't know what's happening. I was there this afternoon. He's dying. They're waiting for his son to get home. Sorry. A military hop. And they're going to pull the plug on him. But when I looked at my wife today, I said, what do you want me to do? And she says, you know what you need to do. Go share. Tell people that they don't have to drink, no matter what goes on. I'll pray for him tonight, and I hope and I know you people will too. And when Anthony gets home, they're going to pull the plug and just see what happens. But, his sister, my wife's sister was like saying, it shouldn't happen to him. And I'm sitting there, and I wanted to say, Patty, you buy him the drinks. He can't get anywhere anymore. You're part of the problem. You're not part of the solution. But you know what? That would be me feeling like I'm being a hero. I'm there to support them, and I'm there to give them the love and care that you people gave me when I came here. So when I looked at my wife, and I was going to call one of you and say, listen, I don't know whether I can make it or not, but my wife said, no, you made a promise. That's one thing you do. When you've been sober, if you make a word, when you write a check with your mouth, your butt will cover it. And that you people taught me. That's something my father and my mom taught me. Those are things that, and I am grateful for those simple things today. If I left anything out, I really don't know. One of the greatest things, too, was I got to go. I don't know, you guys probably know Rich. You guys own Private Plane. And I've had the fortune last year. I gone 4 years ago with him, and last year we went to Founders Day 4 years ago, which was wonderful. And this year, it's kind of like that Lulu song, how do you thank someone who's taken you from crayons to perfume? I said, how do I thank George? I really don't know how to thank him enough. And he tells me, you don't have to thank me for nothing. So I asked Rich, did you have an extra spot? Because I was going to go. And he said, yeah. So we went together, took him to Founders Day. And we got to go up into that room with Bill, Dr. Bob and him, used to take the people. And we got to kneel down at that bed and say the third step prayer together. I'm going to tell you what. This kid who was drinking way back there was not the same kid that was feeling that powerful experience of Founders Day. It was amazing to see 10,000 drunks at Akron University Stadium with speakers there. There was 44 states represented. There was five countries and four continents. And I'm saying, God, I'm glad I'm in this club. Because I used to think the dance was out there. The dance ain't out there, pals. The dance is in here. You know what I mean? And when I struggle with stuff, it's because I don't ask for help. I don't ask God. I don't ask yous. I don't ask anybody. I go about Johnny's way. And Johnny's way got me here. And the last thing I was going to share was that if anybody's here, if anybody's struggling or something, there's somebody out there to help you. They may not be in this room, whatever, but there's somebody out there, a sponsor, who's willing to help people sick and suffering, which I was part of the crew, that's willing to help you. Well, we have to ask. It's like, I remember my sponsor said to me, well, did you share anything at the meeting? And I said, no, I just listened. He's like, no one is going to know what's going on inside of you unless you let them in, unless you share with them. So if there's anybody that's sick and suffering and there is somebody out there that will help you through something as long as you ask for help. I hope tonight that I may have shared something that helped somebody. But if not, I thank yous for keeping me sober one more night. Thank you.